Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Doug Matthews is in studio with us, presented by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office, reminding you, booze it and lose it. Lose your license, your freedom, your life. Doug Matthews, presented by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office, helping you arrive. Doug, how are you?
Doing well. You know, the cleanup hitter, when I was young and growing up, it was always the big home run hitter. You know, Mickey Mantle, those guys. Not so much anymore. That they've got.
Why? Because Paul's batting.
Aaron Judge bats second.
He bats second, and some have put him up in the, you know, to get more at bats, I assume. But that's it. Kind of interesting. Back in the day, of course, I grew up 5 miles from Mickey Mantle. Everybody was a huge Mickey Mantle fan back in the 60s. And I had about 15 rookie cards, and I don't know where they are right now. I like just have one of them.
Yep. You can make some money off those.
What do you think that's worth? Wes, look that up. I'm very curious.
Let's find out what Doug could have.
Mickey Mantle rookie card.
A lot of things I could have.
What could Doug buy? First, we'll find out how much it's worth. Then we'll play What Could Doug Buy?
Yes. Probably my brother would have claimed half of them, so...
Is that for one card?
Yeah. It's the most expensive
card. $10 million, according to Google.
I'm going to go back to my house and see if my mom kept any of those things.
According to Google, $10 million.
If your mom's like anybody else's mom, she did not.
Anyway, we're not here to talk baseball.
Well, we are if it's a $10 million card.
He's getting upset. We're getting Doug upset. He's an unflappable Doug.
Don't remind me what I can't find.
If I had that $10 million, I might not be here today.
Could be $150 million.
Could be. Who knows? What'd you find, Chad?
We're going to NCAA rules question for Doug before we get into some Tennessee stuff, because Jeremy Garrett, the coach at Innsworth, took a quality control off-field position, not one of the main assistant coaches at Vanderbilt. Matt Smith, who's a college football writer, heard our discussion, and he said Garrett would have to be hired as an on-field assistant for the individual associated with a prospect rule to be avoided. Because he is apparently off the field, now Vanderbilt can't recruit Innsworth players for the next 2 years. Because of that. Is that your understanding?
I don't know how deep it goes. I know, let's look at the reason it was put in. The reason it was put in was because a lot of people were doing this. Right. They were hiring someone. I'll use Tennessee as an example. I don't know if this is the reason they did, but they hired Trey Smith's sister, who was a student at Tennessee, to work in the athletic department. Of course, Michigan, probably the most famous case up there. You can go all the way back to Danny Manning. You know, when he went to Kansas. So that's what the rule was put in for. I don't know how deep it goes. I'm assuming they have a system where you can at least appeal something like that. I don't know if that would qualify or not. It keeps, though, Tennessee fans, football fans will certainly remember this. That's one reason why Rush Probst could not be hired at the University of Tennessee. Now, I don't know that he would have been, but the assumption was pretty strong with Coach Pruitt's background that he would have. But, it was put in, and I think it's a very good rule. I really do. Now, how deep it goes, and is it going to keep some coaches from taking jobs someplace? Yes. But I think all in all, the rule was put in for a really good reason.
You know the high school football scene in the state, especially with private schools here locally. That's a really good job, that Innsworth, for some coach out there.
Oh, excellent. Listen, there's a... The private school, if you're a private school, a big private school, a Brentwood Academy, and when I say big, I'm talking about the ones that have been around a while, MBA, all those places. If you're the athletic director also, listen, those jobs are, they are excellent jobs, let me put it like that. I won't put an exact number on it, but it is well in excess and at times over $100,000 and even $200,000 in some instances. They're excellent jobs.
Doug, speaking of high school coaches, there was a coaching clinic last night here in town. You ran over there. I know Philip Fulmer was there. Jeremy Pruitt, along with other members of his staff, were in attendance, and it was very well attended.
When I had my sporting goods company, my son, Tate, who's course, on the show or on the air here now, is president of that company. But we started having Coach Fulmer would bring his staff over. This was in the late 90s, early 2000s. Did it for many years and have a coaching clinic for Middle Tennessee coaches. Was at the Brentwood Middle School at the time. Then they passed a rule where you couldn't have a coaching clinic at a public school when it was outside of or any school when it was outside of the recruiting period. Anyway, make a long story short, that was continued. Every coach has done it except two, Lane Kiffin and Derek Dooley. Butch started backed up, and then Coach last year when Coach Pruitt came in, didn't have quite time to put together. Anyway, it was down at the factory. I had right at 300 Middle Tennessee coaches. They brought the whole staff in, Coach Fulmer came in, introduced Coach Pruitt, if anybody needs an introduction at this point. And it was really neat. His whole staff was here, and they just really talked ball for about 3 hours, stayed around. I was so impressed with Coach Pruitt from this standpoint that when he came walking in the door, said hi, shook my hand, said hi to a couple of people, and then immediately it was for dinner. Stroud's Barbecue always brings a good little food.
Always that. A pooch punt away.
They were surely a pooch punt away. Anyway, and started talking to high school coaches. He spent 30 minutes before everybody was eating, just walking around, shaking hands, saying hi, and just Philip did the same thing. They're really cut out of the same cloth in a lot of ways. And he talked for 30 minutes on not about a program, not about philosophy. He talked about defensive football and really had some neat things to say about how to coach, not particularly how to coach, but how to get players, knowing what was coming and how the defense that when he was at Alabama, they were able to only run a couple of defenses really. And then whatever you lined up in, they were able to adjust that. It was very impressive. Then Jim Chaney spoke and had the majority of the people there. You can see why he is so good at what he does. But it was a great night. They stayed about 3 or 4 hours and talked. They were the last people out of the building. I was very impressed.
Give us an idea, like when they get up to speak, how long do they speak in front of the group? Is it a chalk talk where they have film session? What are they doing?
Well, normally every other coach, including Coach Fulmer, did. A chalk talk with plays and film, tape. Coach Pruitt doesn't like to do that. He likes for his guys just to talk ball and answer questions, and he did that for about 30, maybe 45 minutes, just talk defensive football.
Answer, you can learn a lot just by answering.
Tell you what he did else, and this sounds like it, but it impressed me. The first thing he did was he said, I want everybody to take your pen out, and I want you to write this phone number down. And he gave him the phone number. He said, that's my cell phone. Now, this is a head football coach. That's my cell number. If you have a prospect, if you have anybody you think can play at Tennessee, or if you know of anybody, call that number, and I probably won't answer it, but I will definitely text you back or call you. And he gave his number out 3 or 4 times, his cell number. Now, I wouldn't even give my cell number out to that group of guys. But he did. And, and that's, he's just an old, and I mean this in a very, very professional way. He's just a coach. He doesn't.
That's his element.
He just talks like a coach. He uses occasionally, like all coaches, and I put myself in that category, sometimes say a few words and to describe things that you probably wouldn't use on air. He's just a coach, and everybody loved him. They loved that part of it. They may not be Tennessee fans, but they loved that part of it. Chaney was the same way. I didn't get a chance to hear all the other coaches spoke breakout meetings, but they were there to hear Chaney and they were there to hear Pruitt, and they performed extremely well. The athletic director, who's an old line coach, spent an hour sitting listening to Jim Chaney talk. So it was great. It really was.
615-737-1045, our number. Coming up, we'll get into Rick Barnes and the presser yesterday where he said that if not for the buyout situation at UCLA, he'd be the head coach of the UCLA Bruins. We'll get Doug's take on that comment and more from the presser.
Real quick, though, Coach, how much does that help him? The ability to connect with the high school coaches out there in recruiting, and how much do high school coaches have a say in recruiting today as maybe when you were coaching and built those relationships?
Well, he believes they have a lot to do with it. And he spends more time with high school coaches than any other head coach that I knew up there except Philip. And again, the reason was because he was a high school coach. He said that from right off the bat. His first comments were, he said, listen, I'm just like you guys. I was a high school coach for 9 years, never a head football coach, always wanting to be one. He said, I got lucky that I got a job as an analyst, getting paid. He didn't say what he got paid and got with Coach Saban. And he said, I know you all are looking for the same opportunities. And by the way, if the rule that is in place now had about not being able to take a job, he wouldn't have been able to take a job because Hoover was definitely a recruiting area for Alabama. But it was just neat seeing him work, and there wasn't any pretense or any, he dressed like a coach, he talks like a coach, and he is a coach. That's what he is.
You had to be surprised that despite how honest Rick Barnes is, that he would say in a long presser at any point, yeah, you know what, if not for the buyout situation, I would have gone to UCLA. I mean, that turns heads when you hear that, right?
Well, I was driving listening to you all when you all started talking about it, and honestly, I got a sick feeling in my stomach, because just the very thought of I didn't know what context it was used in and any of that. So when I got home, I had already fired off as I sometimes want to do without thinking, although as I get older, I do a little bit better job of that, but I'm running out of years to learn the lesson. I fired off one to the athletic director. I got a quick phone call back from him and said, what are you talking about? Because when you all were talking about it, it sounded like, and I think you probably thought that Coach Fulmer was still at the press conference.
Well, he opened it. I only heard it. I didn't watch the press or I listened to it. So if you're just listening to it, it sounds like Fulmer's still there after his comments.
They opened together, and Fulmer may have left.
Well, that's what the press conference was essentially there to introduce Kim English. That's what the press conference essentially was for. And Philip was there and said something, and he walks out. So he didn't know anything about this thing. So anyway, I kind of told him what he said, and he didn't have any comment, which I normally, by the way, I sat with him for about 2.5 hours last night. Subject never came up. If he wanted to bring it up, fine. But I went, after I got home, I watched it all twice, listened to it twice. And about 99% of that press conference was absolutely wonderful. He was saying things about the university, about the community, about the state, very eloquently about the administration and what they would do and all that. And then in a one sentence answer, the question at the end came up. He had alluded a little something to about the fact that about the buyout not working and all that. He was asked, had UCLA, and this is the exact words, been able to cover that whole buyout, would you be there now? And he did not hesitate. He said, I think I would have been the head coach. I think I would have been the coach at UCLA. That's what everybody heard. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you the number of people that called me or text me that are quality Tennessee people. A couple of them are on my radio shows and just heard bits and pieces of it. Charles called me from California and said, that's what they heard. You can make anything, say anything you want to say. Everybody's got an opinion. But the fact of the matter is, Rick Barnes is way too intelligent to make a comment like that, regardless of what he felt, because all that did was to a certain percentage of fans slap him in the face. Now, will he be able to overcome this? Absolutely. But it was just an unforced error that had... in that instance, you say something like, and he's been a head football coach for 30, 40 years. You just say something like, hey, UCLA made a wonderful offer. It was something I considered, which he talked a lot about, but I've decided I'm going to end my career here at the University of Tennessee. Then everybody's happy. And why he said that, I don't know. It was probably his feeling. It was surely true. And so now everybody has to be answering questions. Let me just say this about that, though. I'm hearing some people say, well, why'd you give him this much money or that much money? the athletic director decided that he was going to, before any of this came up, Rick Barnes was going to get a raise and probably a significant raise. But what he, here's one thing that's getting passed. You know, one reason, or looks like maybe at least from Coach Barnes' standpoint, the primary reason he didn't go to UCLA is because there was a buyout placed in there by the athletic director that was so expensive he couldn't leave. So again, to me, that I'm sure there was some sort of buyout anyway, but when he redid that contract for him last year and gave him that raise, there was that additional buyout in there. That's why Rick Barnes is not leaving. Now, there's, you know, he injected a lot of different things. He is an extremely religious person, has great faith, believes that the Lord leads him to do things. Pray, he's mentioned several times he prayed about it. That all is wonderful, and but the thing that people are going to remember is, I think I would have been the coach at UCLA if that $4 or $5 million buyout would take place. But here's the puzzling thing to me about this. Do you know who UCLA offered the job to before they offered it to Rick Barnes?
Well, they spoke with John Calipari at some point.
Yeah, they offered the job to the guy at TCU.
Oh, Jamie Dixon.
Jamie Dixon. You know why Jamie Dixon ended up not taking the job?
They didn't pay the buyout.
The buyout. So, good gosh, you got to know that going in. Another thing that interests me, he didn't have an agent, so I assumed he was doing this negotiation by himself, but he mentioned several times he had somebody that handled his personal business, which, unaffiliated, is an agent. He had somebody working on that for him. But the reason that Jamie Dixon didn't take the job, reportedly, was because they had roughly the same buyout, and UCLA wasn't going to pay it.
What is, just spitballing here, what are the rules for talking with another program? What's common courtesy?
There is no rule at all. It's some people have common do it just as a common courtesy. Coach Fulmer definitely wasn't expecting it. If it happened, fine. It happens all the time, but it primarily happens all the time because the agents get involved and the coaches
right.
don't. But no, that's you know, you would like to think that's out there, but listen, in the big money business of college athletics now, there's professional courtesy
sure.
is a term in the way back in the glossary of what you're supposed to
do. That it's just called business now.
Yeah. So they're talking to Philip, but he didn't have any problem at all with what UCLA did. He probably will do the same thing when he needs to hire a coach at some point. But anyway, I think this is it's something that's going to kind of boil there for a while. I am sure Coach Barnes will hear about it, probably hear on the other side that, hey, we're glad you're honest about everything. But, you know, it's kind of like when your wife asks you, does this dress look good on me? You know, hell yeah, it looks good on you. You know, you just gloss over that. And dresses do look great on my wife.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. So here's one thing that I have an issue with, because now there's a lot of people, and you're right, there are a lot of Tennessee fans that are turned off from that no matter what, and they're going to stay turned off from Rick Barnes because of that one statement. But there's a lot of people saying, well, you know, he really didn't choose Tennessee over UCLA. He didn't choose Tennessee over UCLA. Well, there were two different offers made. Philip Fulmer met with him. UCLA met with him. The complete offer, part of that from UCLA was, we're not going to pay your complete buyout. Well, Tennessee had their complete offer, and then at the end of the day, he chose to stay at Tennessee. This leads people now to suspect, well, him saying that shows that he's still gettable for another program out there to come in and try to hire him away. I guess my question is that true? Can you read that far into it? And if that's the case, how many programs like UCLA would have a coaching vacancy, would go after 66 next year-old Rick Barnes for their head coaching vacancy, and where he would actually want to leave Tennessee? I think it's still probably a pretty small number of programs. Would you agree?
Well, there might be
UCLA happen to be in.
There might be those programms out there, but obviously they better have $5 million in their bank that they're
going to pay that buyout. Yeah.
Because they're going to be paying that buyout, I would say.
Yeah.
And I think the guy's probably there for the rest of his, I think that was probably discussed with the athletic director. And hey, I'm glad he's there. I'm not a huge basketball fan. Most of the fans that I know are supporters, let it put it that way, don't have much of a problem with this. It's kind of like I always had people coming up and talking to me about what's Philip going to do about the women's basketball coach. He's got to do this, got to do that. I said, you have Lady Vols season basketball tickets? No. When's the last game you went to? Well, when Pat was there. well, those aren't really Lady Vol basketball fans. And some of the people that are making comments about are really not football fans. They watch and they talk and they have coffee and have a beer every now and then and discuss it. But the people, believe me, the people that matter to the athletic director are the ones that buy tickets and give money to the university. That's the ones that, when I say matter, they all matter. But that's the ones that
the hold weight.
Yeah, he'll probably take a phone call from. He rarely takes a text from me because I do neither.
If only you had that Mickey Mantle card.
That's right.
Then you could.
So,
what's Feinbaum pushing,
Paul
Jack?
Paul Feinbaum, yesterday on his show, said something is wrong at Tennessee and there's a reason he considered leaving. Do you buy into that at all?
That's his opinion on it. That's why, before I commented on this, I wanted to listen to what the press conference was. I would be willing to bet my salary on this show that Paul Feinbaum did not listen to the entire press conference. Maybe he did. If he did, I don't think he would have had that same reaction because, as I said, 90% of what Rick Barnes talked about was about the program, the state, the university, the administration. It was just this one line that kind of cut thing. But, you know, that's Paul's – it's been Paul's I'm a Paul Feinbaum fan. I had him on a couple of my early shows way back in the 20 years ago.
And he's very well connected.
Very well connected. Knows the Southeastern Conference as well as anybody does. And I think highly respected by most of the coaches. He pretty much says he'll call what's going on. And that's obviously his opinion on this. I don't see that. I guess that's his opinion. He is a Tennessee graduate, by the way. So
yes.
I don't know if he buys season tickets. I know he doesn't pay to get in the stadium. I'd be willing to bet on that. but anyway.
Doug, let's get into the spring game. Before we get into Jeremy Pruitt's comments on the offensive line, give us your general assessment from what you heard, what you saw, who you've talked with, about how spring went, what was accomplished.
Every coach you hear is going to say positive things about the spring. Because normally there are positive things about the spring. I don't think there's any question that from people who have watched practice a lot, including the athletic director, watches every practice. This team is deeper. It's going to be more talented. It certainly is more experienced, and they have improved, I think, in a lot of different areas. Now, what's that going to mean in terms of wins? No coach is going to tell you that, but this is a better team, and you would expect it to be a year further along in teaching and learning and knowing what to do and how to do it and what the coach expects, all those things. There have only been a couple of coaching changes on the staff, so all of that is a big plus. There are problem areas, but there are also some areas that Tennessee's going to be a lot stronger in, and I think much, much, much more competitive in the Southeastern Conference. So spring was good. They stayed relatively healthy, which is so big. You hear me talk about that every year. You got essentially about 12 practices, really. You got a spring game and get ready for spring game. And if you miss a half of those or a third of those and you're a younger player, it really puts you behind the eight ball. They had 10 early enrollees. I think five of those guys are going to be contributors, maybe major contributors next fall, if healthy. All in all, it was a plus. But listen, Tennessee was going to get better. You get better players, you're going to get better. They're getting better players. And I think they got very good coaching. And I think they adding Jim Chaney, this staff, and I think adding T. Martin to this staff were huge pluses.
I noticed Wanya Morris, the true freshman, got a lot of snaps at left tackle in the spring game. Overall, what do you think about that offensive lineman, that lineman group, and their chances to really improve this year?
Well, I said Sunday on the show that I doubted, I did not foresee a freshman starting in the offensive line. That was from a lot of different things, talking to people, talking to key people up there, talking to coaches on the staff. Listen, Tennessee, and it's one reason why I was really caught. It really made an impact in me what Coach Pruitt said in his press conference Monday, I think, about spring. Listen, there's one fifth-year redshirt senior on that offensive line. There are four fourth-year redshirt junior. So that's five guys that are older, stronger, bigger, and experienced on that offensive line. To even think that a freshman out of high school could come in and play tackle, to me, is almost unthinkable. You mentioned Trey Smith. Yes, they didn't put Trey Smith out at tackle. They put him in at guard. Guard's easier to play. But after Coach Pruitt's comments, which essentially to me said this, and I'm sure when he had his one-on-one meetings with those individual linemen, he meets one-on-one with every player on the team. I'm sure what his message was, and probably the way that he talks, was, hey, I'm sick of seeing what I'm seeing. You've been around here 4 years. Either get your fanny, work hard and out there, or get the heck out of here because these young guys are going to take over. When he mentioned that, that put a whole new shine on it for me. And then after visiting last night with some of the coaches, I think there is an excellent possibility if those redshirt juniors, and there's four of them, and Brandon Kennedy, the fifth-year senior, if those guys don't come back and are mean and tough, and that's the problem right now. We don't have enough, dare I say, nastiness in this offensive line. And these guys have been around. They're athletic. They're over 300 pounds. There is no excuse why four or five of those guys shouldn't be good. Don't have to be great. Good offensive linemen. I was at Tennessee when we were fortunate enough to have some great offensive linemen. But we only had two or three at a time. You know, a Harry Galbraith, a Bruce Wilkerson, you know, and then after I left, guys, you know, Chad Clifton's. But a couple of them were just really good players that fought and bit and scratched and did everything they could, you know, to walk off that field. They had a bloody nose and all that stuff. And I think that's what he's looking for, and he's not getting that right now. So it's pretty simple for those guys. Either come back this next fall, you know what you need to work on, come back this summer, come back next fall, be a leader on this team that's going to knock people off the line of scrimmage and try to hurt them from a football context, or you're going to be down there on the scout squad. So that is what leads me to believe. Now I'm going to amend what I said Sunday. I think there's a good opportunity that not only Morris, but I think probably Wright, and maybe one of those other freshmen. They got two other guys coming in that Morris, and then two other guys, Lampley and I forget the other one.
Akparajane.
McBride, I think. No, he's Akparajane was already there. He was there this summer, this spring. So I'd say if those guys don't come back, if they didn't get the message, you know, most of all of them have graduated anyway. Come on back. You'll be down on the scout squad, and I'll have these young guys in there playing.
Well, and I get what you're saying. You're saying you don't have to be the best athlete, but we want to pick you out of a lineup if we get into a fight. We want you on our side. You want that type of mentality.
Listen, this is almost every position, but you know the ability at the levels. It's not the NFL level. But the ability in major college football, everybody's pretty close to each other. You know, you're not going to go out there and just overwhelm anybody. And you may be one of those guys that aren't quite as good, quite as big, quite as strong, quite as quick. So you better be running when they're not. And you better be able to – how do you slow down a pass rusher? You hit him so many times, just like the old boxing thing. You hit a guy, enough guys in the ribs, and those arms are going to come down. It's the same thing, and that's what's not happening up there right now. The athletic director talks about it. Philip talks about it because he was a lineman. He was a coach of the offensive line. And until Tennessee – football program gets where their offensive line is a bunch of guys that want to go out in an alley and fight during the game, you know, go to church on Sunday, then come out here on Monday, and I want to see you whipping somebody's fanny. Until Tennessee gets that back, they're going to continue to be a pretty good football team, because I was around three of the best teams Tennessee had, and all those offensive linemen, nobody messed with them, nobody, including coaches, nobody messed with them. The head coach knew, you know, and you're not afraid of him. But hey, I want a guy that when he gets out there, he's trying to whip somebody's fanny and looking for somebody to hit. Our best offensive linemen, those defensive backs and linebackers, had their head on a swivel looking for who was coming. And I haven't seen that at Tennessee for half a dozen or a dozen years. Until we get back to doing that, we're going to be a pretty good football team.
I wish our listeners could hear Doug talk about this off air. instead of the word fanny.
Also, fanny. I also love how the coach was so fired up talking about it, but then still ends it with a pretty good football team.
Yeah.
They've been bad. I mean, you're being nice when you say, I know what you're saying to get to great, but.
No, I'm talking about future. We can be a pretty good team. There were some years I was there. We were a pretty good team.
I think fanny is a word that is going to expire generationally. Like fruitcake.
We're going to keep alive on this show.
Oh, that's Doug in the moment trying to figure out, how do I censor myself here?
Well, we're gonna have to, but he uses the word fanny as a substitute. We would use a different word as a substitute.
I'm old school on that. My mother's still alive.
Do you eat fruitcake?
No, I've never eaten fruitcake. My mother is alive and living and listening in Tulsa, Oklahoma. So
love that.
Hello, Tulsa.
Going back to the Cotton Bowl, I've embarrassed her once on national TV. I don't want to do it anymore. So, you know, that kid ever. Still hadn't got his rear end up the football field.
Doug, what are your weekend plans coming up?
Well, first off, I want everybody to know this. I haven't done this in 4 or 5 years. I don't do replays of my shows, but I am on Sunday, Easter Sunday, and I'm just. Just talked with Brad Willis, and he gave me the go-ahead on it. But Saturday, I think we're going to have a great show. Alan Cockrell will be back.
Oh, great.
His name came up last night. Jim Chaney, we were talking about recruiting and some things while I was talking to him. He said, you know, I recruited a guy out of Joplin, Missouri that went to Tennessee named Alan Cockrell. And, and so we talked about Alan a little bit. I still think Alan's going to be on Talking Baseball, of course. He was minor leagues for many years, had a couple of, as they call it, cups of coffee in the majors, and then for the last 4 or 5 years before with Girardi, he was the hitting instructor. Has some interesting stories about. We won't get into those because we're talking college here. But anyway, he had one of the tremendous ability and tore that knee up. Fourth game he played against Auburn, his freshman year, started as a true freshman. Tore everything in his knee, ligaments, cartilage, everything, and came back and still led us to 2 wins over to Alabama and had a great baseball career. But anyway, Alan's going to be on. He's living in North Carolina now. So,
and, of course, you'll have Tony and Charles.
Tony's back on. Charles is back on. Charles was, Charles keeps his cool pretty well.
He was fired up over the Rick Barnes stuff?
He was upset about that, and he was calling me to say kind of, tell me this isn't as bad as it sounded. And I said, well, it isn't as bad as it sounded. I'm not sure he was convinced.
Let me read you the text I sent to the AD.
You know what those guys, and I know we got to go here, but the guys like him, and every university has people like Charles Davis, who were tremendous ambassadors, outstanding players, and just love their university and school so much. Charles talks about Tennessee every place he goes. And he's from New Paltz, New York. He probably... You could probably spell Tennessee, but he didn't know where it was. And I keep going back to this. You know why, Charles? You've heard me say this. He went to the university. He called us. His daddy called us. His daddy was his high school coach. And he called us in 1982 or 3 and said, hey, I have a player up here. It's my son. I'd like for you to look at him as a quarterback. And we don't recruit New York. Well, we'd like for you to look at him. Well, okay, why are you interested in Tennessee? He said, because I know the University of Tennessee will play African-American quarterbacks. Condridge Holloway. Without Condridge Holloway, Charles Davis would have never have even been interested in Tennessee. So,
did you mention he was going to play safety in that conversation?
No. He comes in, and then he met Tony Robinson. And Charles is smart enough to know that, hey, I can either sit on the bench and play catch, or I can go out and be a 4-year starter and great player at safety, which he was.
Doug, the time with you always flies by. Thank you so much for coming in each week. This has been excellent.
See you next week. Thank you.